in liberation from the domination of nature and in improving the pattern of relationships. Social groups and possessors of power who fought against it, all propagandists of every sort of obscurantism, had their shady reasons and always led men into misery and servitude. But if in particular historical situation, knowledge can by its mere presence obstruct evil and become power, the effort to make it in isolation the highest purpose and means of salvation rests on a philosophical misunderstanding. It cannot be said in general in a priori what meaning and value some particular knowledge has. That depends on social conditions as a whole at the particular time and the concrete situation to which it belongs. Thought, which taken in isolation are identical in content, can at one time be unripe and fantastic and at another outdated and unimportant, yet in a particular historical moment form factors of a force that changes the world. Page 421. There is no eternal riddle in the world, no world secret, that penetration of which once and for all would be the mission of thought. This narrow view, which ignores the constant alteration in knowing human beings along with the object of their knowledge, as well as the insurmountable tension between concept and objective reality, corresponds today to the narrow horizon of groups and individuals who, from their felt inability to change the world through rational work, grasp at and compulsively hold to universal recipes, which they memorize and monotonously repeat. When the dialectic is freed of its connection with the exaggerated concept of isolated thought, self-determining and complete in itself, the theory defined by it necessarily loses the metaphysical character of final validity, the sanctity of a revelation, and becomes an element itself transitory, intertwined in the fate of man. But by ceasing to be a closed system, the dialectic does not lose the stamp of truth. In fact, the disclosure of conditional and one-sided aspects of other thought and its own forms, an important impetus to the intellectual process. Hegel and his materialist followers were correct in always stressing that this critical and relativizing characteristics is a necessary part of cognition. But the certitude in verification of its own conviction does not require the assertion that concept and object are here henceforth once and thought can rest. To the degree that the knowledge gained from perception and interference, methodical inquiry in historical events, daily work and political struggle meet the test of the available means of cognition, it is the truth. The abstract proposition that once a critique is justified from its own standpoint, it will show itself open to correction, expresses itself for the materialists not in liberality toward opposing views or skeptical indecision, but in alertness to their own errors and flexibility of thought. They are no less objective than pure logic when it teaches that their relativistic talk of a subjective truth, which is this for one and the opposite for another, must trade as nonsense. Footnote 18 text. Since that extra-historical and hence exaggerated concept of truth, which stems from the idea of a pure infinite mind and thus in the last analysis from the God concept, is impossible. It no longer makes any sense to orient the knowledge that we have to this impossibility and in this sense call it relative. The theory which we regard as correct may disappear because the practical and scientific interests which played a role in the formation of its concept and above all the facts and circumstances to which it referred have disappeared. Page 422. Then this truth is in fact irrecoverably gone, since there is no superhuman essence to preserve the present-day relationship between the content of ideas and their objects in its all-embracing spirit, when the actual human being have changed or even when mankind has died out. Only when measured against an extraterrestrial unchanging existence does human truth appear to be of an inferior quality, at the same time as it nevertheless necessarily remains inconclusive and to that extent relative. It is also absolute, since later correction does not mean that a former truth was formerly untrue. In this progress of knowledge, to be sure, much incorrectly regarded as true will prove wrong. Nevertheless, the overturn of categories stems from the fact that the relationship of concept and reality is affected and altered as a whole, and in all its part by the historical changes in forces and tasks. To a large extent, the direction and outcome of the historical struggle depends on the decisiveness with which men draw the consequences of what they know, their readiness to test their theories against reality and refine them, in short, by uncompromising application of the insight recognized as true. The correction and further definition of the truth is not taken care of by history, so that all cognizant subject has to do is passively observe, conscious that even his particular truth, which contains the other negated in it, is not the whole. Rather, the truth is advanced because the human beings who possess it stand by it unbendingly, apply it and carry it through, act according to it and bring it to power against the resistance of reactionary, narrow, one-sided points of view. The progress of cognition includes real historical will and action just as much as it does learning from experience and intellectual comprehension. The latter cannot progress without the former. Freed from the idealistic illusion, the dialectic transcends the contradiction between relativism and dogmatism, while it does not suppose the progress of criticism and definition at an end with its own point of view and does not hypostatize the latter. It in no way surrenders the conviction that in the whole context to which its judgment and concepts refer, its cognition are valid not only for particular individuals and groups, but in general. That is, that the opposing theory is wrong. The dialectical logic also contains the law of contradiction, but in materialism it has completely stripped of its metaphysical character, because here a static system of propositions about reality, indeed any relation of concept and object not historically mediated, no longer appears meaningful as an idea. Page 423. The dialectical logic in no way invalidates the rules of understanding, while it has as its subject the forms of movement of the advancing cognitive process, the breaking up and destructuring of fixed systems and categories also belong in its scope, along with the coordination of all intellectual forces as an impetus to human practice in general. In a time which in its lack of a way out tries to make everything into a fetish, even the abstract business of understanding, and would like thereby to replace the lost divine support so that its philosophers rejoice in ostensibly non-temporal relations between isolated concepts and propositions as the timeless truth, the dialectical logic points out the questionable character of the interest in such rigor. and the existence of a truth apart from it, which is in no way denied by it. If it is the truth that a person has tuberculosis, this concept may indeed be transformed in the development of medicine or lose its meaning altogether. But whoever today with the same concept makes a contrary diagnosis, and not in terms of a higher insight which includes the determination of this man's tuberculosis, but simply denies the finding from the same medical standpoint, is wrong. The truth is also valid for him who contradicts it, ignores it, or declares it unimportant. Truth is decided not by what the individual believes and thinks of himself, not by the subject in itself, but by the relation of the propositions to reality. And when someone imagines himself the messenger of God or the rescuer of a people, the matter is not decided by him or even the majority of his fellow men, but by the relation of his assertion and acts to the objective facts of the rescue. The conditions to which those opinions point must really occur and be present in the course of events. There are at present various opposed views of society. According to one, in the present wretched physical and psychological state of the masses and the critical conditions of society as a whole, in the face of the developed state of the productive apparatus and technology, necessarily follows from the continued existence of an absolute principle of social organization. According to the others, the problem is not the principle but interference with it or carrying it too far, or a matter of spiritual, religious, or purely biological factors. They are not all true, only that theory is true which can grasp the historical process so deeply that it is possible to develop from it the closest approximation to the structure and tendency of social life in the various spheres of culture. It too is not exception to the rule that it is conditioned, like every thought and every intellectual content, but the circumstances that it corresponds to a specific social class and is tied up with the horizon and interests of certain groups does not in any way change the fact that it is also a valid for the others who deny and suppress the truth and must nevertheless eventually experience it for themselves. Page 424. This is the place to define the concept of proof which dominates the logic of many otherwise opposed tendencies. Epicurus says, just as we do not desire the knowledge of the physician for the sake of its technical perfection itself, but consider it good for the sake of good health, and the skill of the helmsman possesses its value because it masters the methods of correct navigations, but does not find recognition for its perfection, so wisdom, which must be perceived in skill in life, would not be thought after if it did not accomplish something. Footnote 19, text. The motive of result and proof as criteria of science and truth has never disappeared in the subsequent history of philosophy. Goethe's line, "What fruitful is alone is true." And the sentence, "I have noticed that I regard as true the idea which is fruitful for me," fits in with the rest of my thought and at the same time benefits me. Footnote 20, text, appears to imply a pragmatic theory of cognition. Many phrases of Nietzsche suggests a similar interpretation. The criterion of truth lies in the increase in the feeling of power. What is truth? Inertia, the hypothesis with which satisfaction occurs, the least use of spiritual strength, and so on. Footnote 21, text. True means useful for the existence of human beings, but since we know the condition for the existence of human beings only very imprecisely, the decision as to true and untrue can, strictly speaking, only be based on success. Footnote 22, text. With Goethe and Nietzsche, it is necessary to place such views to which contradictions exist in their own writing, in the context of their entire thought, in order to comprehend their meaning properly. But as a special school of professional philosophy has grown up since the middle of the 19th century, which places the pragmatic concept of truth in the center of its system,